We are doing a series on pop idols, it's called, or in other words, popular idols, you see. And that's my idea, and I've patented it, and I'm very pleased with this. And I'll tell you what idolatry is. This is fun. Idolatry is making the very good things that God has given us more important than God himself. And where it might be money or sex or power, or you can fill in the blanks, but it's making anything that God has given us more important than we make him. And to help us look at this whole topic of idolatry, we are wading our way through a biblical book called Judges. Not often mentioned at length in church, mostly because it's deemed to be slightly boring. We are doing a 14-part series on it, and I think that so far it has been far from boring, I like to think. I mean, I'm paying people to nod at this point, so look around. This is my money being spent here. This week is a slightly unusual week. It is, for me, probably the most difficult topic that I've ever spoken about, including sex. It is a tough subject, but I just think we as a church need to be dealing with tough topics. I'll come on to exactly what it is in a moment. But why are we looking at the book of Judges with relation to idols? Well, you see, the Israelites, about 3,000 years ago, at the time of Judges, were facing the same sort of temptations to follow different idols, different gods, other than the God, as we face today. And so we're learning from their mistakes and their successes. Bit of background for you, I won't dwell on this, but the book of Judges is basically a large collection of stories involving the Israelites, that is God's chosen people. These people had just travelled through the, was it the Dead Sea? I always forget whether it was the Red Sea or the Dead Sea. Can you remember? Red, was that? Red, thank you very much. Good. It says here, Red Sea, yes. Okay, well done. Well done, you're correct. So they just travelled through the Red Sea, and as you do, and they've just turned up in the promised land called Canaan. And it's largely the sort of what we call Israel now. The boundaries have obviously changed, but that's a sort of location. And there is this sort of cycle of the Israelites sort of following the Canaanites' way of living, getting into all known trouble, crying out to God for help, and then God sending them another judge to redirect them in the right way. Each time they fell into trouble, God gave them a new judge to help them. And these judges were, in a sense, spiritual leaders. They were sort of tribal leaders, but with a very specific job of directing the spiritual direction of the Israelite people. Okay. Now, the biblical book of Judges comes immediately after another biblical book, obviously, called Joshua. And they sort of follow on, chronologically, they follow on from one to another. Joshua, he's the name of the chap who brought the Israelites initially into the land of Canaan. One of only two people who actually came out of Egypt in slavery and saw the promised land, the other one being Caleb. And so the book of on Joshua is all about him and how he led the Israelites in. And then that book ends with the death of Joshua, and then the book of Judges sort of starts immediately thereafter. So, one of the biggest problems in the whole book, in the books of Judges and Joshua, that readers have today relates to a command that God gave the Israelites. And the command was to drive out the Canaanite people from their land. Literally, evict a nation from their land. Did God really say that? So this is a tough subject. Just before Joshua died, he addressed the Israelite people, and he passed on to them a message from God. And it says, "Behold, I have allotted to you as an inheritance for your tribes, land, from the Jordan to the great sea in the west. The Lord your God will push them back before you and drive them out of your sight. And you shall possess the land just as the Lord your God promised you." Joshua then died, and the next book sort of immediately began, Judges. And it starts with this. After the death of Joshua, the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, "Who shall go up first against the Canaanites to fight against them?" And the Lord said, "Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into their hands." Let's be clear on this. God said that Judah should be the first tribe, of which there are 12, of the Israelites, that should drive the Canaanites out of their land by force if necessary. God said to the Israelites, if they don't go voluntarily, you should forcibly drive them out and, if needs be, kill them. Did God really say that? So the question that we have is that how do you reconcile a God of love, of peace and justice, with a God who commands that the Israelites drive out the Canaanite people from their own land? Now, why are we looking at this? Well, this is a key aspect to the books of Joshua and Judges. I wish this was, you know, some small snippet that we could just sort of pass by and not really pay too much attention to. But it's not. You see, the stories in Judges that we're looking at over these next however many weeks, they rest on this premise that God has commanded the Israelites to drive out the Canaanites from their own land. So we can't ignore this. This is fundamental. And it's terribly awkward. It's a very, very difficult subject. But I just don't think we can ignore it. I don't think it's right for us to do so. If the Israelites had done as God had commanded, and indeed had driven the Canaanites from their land, and if you were here last week, you would have found out that they didn't do that. And in subsequent weeks, you will find out in more detail that they didn't do that. But if they had, then the cyclical events of disaster and restoration would never have happened. And so, God's command to drive the people out is critical to the book of Judges. And therefore, it remains a deeply uncomfortable notion for us to comprehend today. The sorts of people who drive a nation out from their land are dictators. They're religious fanatics, ill-warped people who are widely regarded to be evil. When I think of historical figures who have driven out a nation from their land, I think of Stalin and Hitler. I think of the 19th century Native Americans, the black population of Southern Africa, and South Africa in particular. The Aboriginal race of Australia. Today, when we look at the news, we see organisations around who are seeking to, if not doing so, driving people out of their land. Boko Haram, which means Western education is forbidden, seeks to establish an Islamic State in Nigeria. The Islamic State, which was formerly known as ISIL, which means, which stands for the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or Levant, I don't know how you pronounce it. Another name for Islamic State is ISIS, which is the Islamic State for Iraq and Syria. Technically, those two names are now defunct, and the politically correct term, if there is such one, is Islamic State. These people seek to transform to form a transnational Islamic state, which adheres to a very extreme interpretation of Islam, and promotes religious violence. The Taliban movement. Taliban means student. It's largely based in Afghanistan, and it seeks to impose a radical form of Sharia law, means sort of religious law, but it has a very specific Islamic bent to it. There are many more organizations, both religious and organizations which are sort of ideological, that seek to drive people out of a land, and it's based on hatred of all forms. Is the command of God to drive out the Canaanites similar to the actions that we know and loathe of dictators and fanatical religious organizations? Well, there is no doubt in my mind that the answer to that is no. God is most certainly not like either the people or the organizations that I have just listed. And the rest of this talk is here to sort of get into the detail of that. But because this book is so important, because this point is so important to the book of Judges, and because this whole notion is so difficult for us to comprehend, especially given that we're in a world which at this moment has terrible things happening right now. It's not necessarily affecting each one of us here, but it does affect hundreds and thousands of people elsewhere in the world, and these things have affected millions throughout history. So we have to look at this. Let's start addressing this question by reading God ourselves out of the Bible. So, I should have said, I'm sorry, there are some Bibles at the back there. You're welcome to disbelieve me and have a look yourself as to whether, whether what I'm saying, when I'm quoting the Bible, I'm not, making it up. This is from the ESV version. After the death of Joshua, the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, "Who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?" And the Lord said, "Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand." And then Judah went up, and the Lord gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they defeated 10,000 of them at Bezek. And they found somebody called Andonai Bezak at Bezak, and they fought against him and defeated the Canaanites and the Pezerites. And Adoni Bezak fled, but they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And Andonai Bezak, I can't pronounce the word, he said this: 70 kings with their thumbs and their big toes cut off used to pick up scraps under my table. As I have done, so God has repaid me. And they brought him to Jerusalem, which was, you know, the capital of Israel. And he died there. God gave very clear order to drive them out. Why? I think the answer here is complicated. There is no one single line that I can just whip out of my pocket which will tidy this whole issue up for you and make it all utterly understandable and you know, the, yes, now I get it moment. That's not going to happen. It is complicated. It needs to be looked at in some detail. First of all, I like to look at the two, I think, principal factors which will help us to give a bigger, help us to understand a much bigger picture as to why God asked the Israelites to drive the Canaanites out. Okay, now, in almost every instance in history where one nation has been driven out by another, the core driving force for the invasion has been either race discrimination or ideological imperialism. Long words. Ideological imperialism, by that what I mean is extending one's country's power and authority in a neighboring territory because they're power-thirsty people. Okay, that's what imperialism is. You may have picked that up from Star Wars. And neither of these factors, neither race discrimination or ideological imperialism, played any part in God's command for the Israelites to be driven out of Canaan. So let's look at this in detail. Firstly, God didn't order the driving out of the Canaanites on the basis of race. It was not because the Canaanites were different that the Israelites were required to chuck them out. The purpose of the invasion is clearly stated in Judges 2, verse 2. And there we find the goal of the eviction. And it's this, and I quote, "You shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land, and you shall break down their altars." What does that mean? I mentioned this last week, but the Canaanites were a pluralistic nation. They worshipped many gods, but they particularly worshipped at length a god called Baal, and they had a very specific, highly sexualized form of worshipping Baal, which included prostitutes called priestesses. It was one of the most alluring forms of worship to the outsider, especially guys, basically. So not only was this Baal worship idolatrous, but it was very, very tempting. And so God's command not to was not to eradicate a race, but it was to eradicate the worship of their gods, or any other god. Which, by the way, is a very, very good thing for them. Timothy Keller, whose book has helped me enormously to write this series and this talk, puts it like this, I quote, "The purpose is to cleanse Canaan from idols, so that Israel is able to live in covenant faithfulness to the Lord, by allowing the Canaanites to continue to live in the land, or by making covenant agreement with them for whatever reason, the end result is that idols are being worshipped in the midst of the Israelites. God's command was not to eradicate a race, it was to eradicate the worship of other gods. The second point is, God did not order the expansion of an imperialistic nation. He didn't condone or allow the Israelites to plunder or enslave the Canaanites. They were just to be driven out, full stop. And we can see, if we were to look in Joshua chapter 7, there's a character there called Achan, and he was an Israelite, and he did take stuff as plunder. And this is what in Joshua, this is what God said about this person. Israel has sinned. They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. They have taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen and lied and put them among their own things. In other words, he committed blunder. He committed plunder. And this is God saying, that's not what I said. I didn't ask you to do that. That is wrong. You have sinned by doing that. Now, what was normal at this time in military conquests was for people to be taken captive, to be made into forced labor, and for their stuff to be taken. This was specifically forbidden in this instance. The purpose of the eviction was not for the Canaanites, not for the Israelites to become rich. It was simply so that God could be worshipped and only God could be worshipped. It was not so that the Israelites could become more powerful or more prosperous in any regard. So, okay, we've looked at two principal reasons, and I think these are spurious reasons why God commanded the eviction, race discrimination and ideological imperialism. I don't think those are the reasons why God asked the Israelites to invade Canaan. And I think they're the reasons often given. I think there are, however, two principal, legitimate reasons for God's seemingly uncharacteristic command. What are they? Let's have a look. The Israelites were easily tempted. You see, God wanted them to quote Joshua 28 verse 8, I'm sorry, 23 verse 8, God wanted the Israelites to cling to the Lord, their God, just as they've done every day. That's what he wanted. But God knew that the Israelites were weak, that they would follow each and every distraction of Canaanite culture, especially the ones regarding the sexual worship of Baal. The Canaanites were required to be driven out because their culture, their gods, were an almost irresistible temptation for the Israelites. Were the Israelites given the land because they were some kind of superior race? Absolutely not. They were not a superior race, and God knew that well. Again, Timothy Keller puts it like this: the need to evict the Canaanites was probably due to the Israelites' weakness in the face of temptation. In other words, the eviction was not a testimony of how virtuous the people were, but how spiritually weak they were. That's one. Number two, God was pushing the Canaanites out because of their idolatry. You see, God is the God of justice. He is the judge of all things. We are not, which is a good thing. I'd much rather that God makes the judgment call and not the likes of you or I or any other human. And I am of the opinion that when God sees injustice, he does not turn a blind eye. He acts accordingly. That's what being a just God has to be like. So God exercises justice. And he also sees the big picture. He sees the nation over all eternity. And he pronounces whatever he seems to deem fit. And he does so whenever he deems it the right time to do so. With the Canaanites, it would appear that justice came early. And the interesting fact here is that the Canaanites themselves recognized the righteousness of the actions of the Israelites, even though it was them who were being driven out. That chap, do you remember his name? I found difficult to pronounce. Andoni Bezak. That means Lord of the Bezaks, i.e. that was the tribe in that particular part that Judah was required to drive out. He was the chief there. And he said, as I have done, so God has repaid me. You remember that story, the thumbs and the big toes being cut off? That's because that's what he had done 70 times over. This Lord of the Bezeks is simply affirming the righteousness of God and it happening to himself. The Canaanites knew they were doing wrong. They were not at all surprised that God was punishing them by sending the Israelites to drive them out from their land. They may have even been expecting it. And so whilst many readers of this book find God's commandment shocking, the Canaanites did not. Conclusion. Earlier today in the talk, I asked, is the command of God to drive out the Canaanites similar to the actions that we know and loathe of dictators and fanatical religious organizations? Well, in this story, in Joshua and Judges, God commanded a nation to be driven out because their culture, by their own admission, was wrought with evil practices that warranted drastic action. And they were driven out because God knew that others would be drawn to following their ways. That, in a nutshell, is what's going on here. Can the same be said of Nigeria, Afghanistan, Australia, America, any other place where people have been driven out of their land? The answer is no. I don't believe that there has ever been an instance outside of these stories told in the Bible where people deserve to be forcefully removed from their land and where their forced removal is regarded by themselves as justified. Yes, there are plenty of stories of ethnic cleansing, of imperial dictatorship, of holy wars, some people call them. But when we closely examine and compare these to the story that we're reading through in the book of Judges, we find that the two bear no resemblance to each other at all. Today, Israel remains to be one of the most volatile places in the world. It has a long and fraught history relating to wars. It's been established, it was established in 1948, Israel as we know it now. And since 1948, it has had 7 recognized wars, 2 Palestinian uprisings, and a series of armed conflicts in the broader Arab-Israeli conflict. Before 1948, this land has been around and occupied for over 3,000 years. And during that, the capital, Jerusalem, has been destroyed over 40 times. According to someone called Eric Klein, who wrote a book called Jerusalem Besieged, Jerusalem has been subject to 118 conflicts. Do you think God knew then what the Israeli history would look like now? Do you think then the multitude of deaths and wars that would emerge in that region because of human nature's propensity to kill and hate each other, would that have happened had of the Israelites done what God had commanded? I think that God is well aware of the depths that we as people sink to when we wander far from God. I think his command was an incredibly loving command. It was made with the full knowledge that only God has of all history, knowing that it would have prevented immeasurable pain. Look, this is a tough subject. Tough subjects don't have easy answers. There's stuff in here I still struggle with myself. I'm just being honest with you here. That I'm not God is not a good enough reason for us to not tackle these problems as best we can. We ought not to sidetrack them, even if we never get a full, conclusive, bomb-proof argument. And I understand that there's going to be people here who have doubts or questions. I imagine exceptionally good questions, questions worth asking as a result of this talk. And I'd like to be clear on something here. Look, if you have doubts on this matter, if you still find this whole area really, really difficult, that's fine. It's absolutely allowed. I appreciate having gone into it in some depth in preparation for this, but it is an incredibly difficult situation, and I find it hard to deal with. I would not recommend or wish for anyone to rush to a conclusive decision in their own thinking without really delving even more deeply into this subject. I think you should be thinking this through. I hope that this talk has at least been helpful for you and has shed some light on the subjects. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. Can I just say, I still like you. And I'd love it if you could still like me too. Well, as best you can, anyway. And I'll end on this. You know, the problem that the church now is dealing with is the problem that disagrees with itself avidly. And look, there's some stuff that we're not going to agree on within the church. But I think what we should do is disagree really well if we're going to disagree. I'd love to be a body of people who disagree really well if we're going to disagree. I just think that would avoid these sorts of conflicts. So, that was fun. Why don't you stand up? I think that we do need for God to bless us and speak to us. If I've offended anyone here, if you've got questions and you're just desperate to ask them to me, please do. I may not have the answers, but you know, I don't want you to feel offended. That's certainly not the purpose of my talk. Far, far, far from it. But nevertheless, if that's just, you know, a consequence of it, then will you please talk to me? Either this morning or think it through and then come back to me, you know, some other time. Alex, go have a coffee. You know. Lord, we need you. We're desperate for you. Help us to make sense on a personal level what you've done in history, why you've done it. Help us to see all of it from your perspective. The stuff which I've said which has been wrong or not of you, then I would ask that there would be some recording problem, that there would be some memory loss, that you would override all of that. Or if not, just work deeply into the listeners, into their hearts and their minds. All that has been of you during this talk, I'd ask that you would give us the grace to think it all through and consider it deeply. And as a result of that, respond in the best possible way that we can. Do we loathe our enemies? I mean, I mentioned a lot of organizations, current organizations, which are linked with Islam. Do we loathe them? Absolutely, we do not. We do not, we do not, we do not. I've got so many fantastic friends who believe in Islam. Okay, I disagree with that as a religion, but they are lovely people, and they would never, never think to condone or be part of that sort of fanatical action. And I just want to make that distinction utterly clear. I should have mentioned that earlier on, I'm sorry. And look, I pray a blessing on all the world that follow the Islamic religion. Not because I agree with the Islamic religion, but I know that they are your children and I love them and I know you love them. So bless them as a people group. All over the world, bless them. Bless the ones who are especially in the UK, who we know and work and spend football time with and all the rest of it. I pray that we would be the very best friends that they have. Help us to be defiant as we come against disagreement. Which is a slightly different issue, but I thought we should know that. I just ask God that you would bless what I have talked about today in our hearts And I just pray that we would personally be able to deal with it all. And I just ask God that you would just bless us in every other regard as well. Just, you know, during the week, I pray that your Spirit falls upon us and dwells in us in our humdrum lives, in the big decisions that we have to make, as we speak to our neighbours and friends and colleagues and family, you know, about you, as we, whatever is in your life, I just ask that God blesses you and is with you each and every day. And I pray that you are especially right in front of the speakers of DTI next weekend, proclaiming your word to those children, that they would deeply fall in love with you, especially those who don't really know you yet. I pray for a massive number of children who declare for the first time that you are their loving God, friend and saviour, and you wish for them to, you'll be that for them forever. I pray that there'll be masses of people who see you for who you are for the first time. And there'll be masses of people who see you again, having forgotten, and then just come straight back into your presence and go, yeah, this is good, I want to stay here. Bless Steve and Davina, all the other leaders of DTI. Give them sleep. And just bless them in, when those conversations arise. What do you think about that? Give them words. Give them your blessing, your grace, and your wisdom. Especially when they've just had 2 hours sleep. Amen.